Thanks for joining us. We are having a conversation today with Eva Galpern and Allison Macrina, and we're talking about digital privacy for teens in libraries and museums, but also generally. So I wanted to touch on some things like what is digital privacy, why is this an important issue to talk to teens about? So I guess I wanted to start with you, Allison. So tell me a little bit more about the Library Freedom Project and what's happening for you, what's been happening for you over the past year with your Knight Grant.
The Library Freedom Project is an initiative that I started to bring digital privacy and more specifically anti-surveillance trainings into libraries, because I recognize that librarians are a community of people who care very deeply about privacy. They recognize the connection with privacy and other things like intellectual freedom. And they, maybe perhaps most importantly, they teach community education classes for free. They teach people all kinds of things about using their computers, and so helping them understand how to have better privacy on computers and on mobile devices sort of fits in with what they're already doing in their libraries. And we've had a really amazing year. We won the Knight Foundation's News Challenge in January, and since then we've trained librarians in more than 20 states in four countries, and which amounts to about 2,500 librarians, I think, is what we nailed last year. And we've talked to a lot of their communities directly as well. We've seen them implementing privacy protective technologies on public computers, teaching computer classes. We work very closely with the ACLU and with the TOR project. So we've got the sort of legal and policy side and the technologists, some of the technologists who are working on these things to help us cover those different contours. And most recently, I won another grant to hire Nima Fatemi, who works for TOR Project. Now is going to be, you know, working more formally with us to help bring these privacy trainings into libraries. So, yeah, it's been pretty exciting.
It's been a wild year for you.
Yeah, definitely.
So I got really excited about your initiative at, I think it was around ALA last year, mm-hmm. and I went to the session that you organized, the post-conference. And so I'd love to hear a little bit more about that, but before we talk about that, I'm just curious, since you've been to, you go to your events page and you see that you guys are everywhere, mm-hmm. and you're meeting a lot of librarians, you're a lot of library systems. Are there any libraries you're seeing out there that are doing work with teaching teens about digital privacy, and what might that look like?
I would say that that's lately the biggest interest that I've seen. And I'm not sure what happened in the last 6 months or so that made that happen, but more whenever I get contacted by libraries to come in and do training, I'm seeing more and more that are interested in teen-specific programming and also in having me come in and teach something to their teen patrons. And so maybe there's something, there's been some recognition recently that teens do actually care about their privacy, and that's certainly been my experience. So quite often I'll come in and teach something alongside of the teen librarians that already work at the library, or I'll teach them sort of how to do it on their own. And I meet many teens themselves, and my experience of that is that they continue to impress me with the level of knowledge they have on the subject already. This is the teens, that is. They, many of them understand at a sort of fundamental level things like threat modeling, with what Eva's going to talk about. They see the application of privacy not for their own lives only, but for the lives of other people, which is very important. I think they're a group that I've never once had to really counter the narrative of, you know, I believe I have nothing to hide, and so who cares about privacy? They don't feel that way at all. And even if maybe they feel that about themselves, they know that their friend whose parents are immigrants does not have the same privilege. They know that their friend who is queer doesn't have the same privilege. And so their thinking around this is very sophisticated, and it's very impressive.
That's surprising. I'm curious what other things you might have noticed about going into these libraries, what other surprising things, whether it's been the staff that you're meeting or other people that you've been encountering. Like, what do they know? What do they don't know? What do they not know?
I continue to be impressed with how much interest there is. We still can't keep up with the demand, which is great. You know, as time has gone on, I think, you know, it's taken a while, I think, since Snowden began the revelations about NSA surveillance for that to really influence the public imagination. But I think that it did tip something off. And since then, I think especially the increasing work of activist organizations like EFF and ACLU, people have really started to shift their thinking around this stuff and start to really prioritize privacy. So I'm surprised always when I see that happening more and more. And it happens at all levels. I mean, the librarians are that way and their patrons. But the most impressive to me is certainly the teens, because I think there's a very insidious way of thinking that adults like to parrot, that teens are a group that don't care about their privacy at all because they're so willing to share information about themselves on social media. And it's been my experience that they do care, but they're the ones who want to be in control.
Right. That's interesting. So another question, are there libraries that are doing this work that are more targeting underserved communities or underserved teens? I guess I'm just wondering if you have seen a difference in the availability of this information in more affluent communities, more affluent libraries.
I've yet to be contacted by an affluent library for teen programming.
Mm-hmm.
And I should say maybe the library itself is well-funded, but the audience that we have are teens who, it seems to me, in talking to the librarians and in talking to the teens who are using the library are using it because it's a very needed resource. So some of the places I've been to recently, most recently, the best teen program I had recently was at the Yonkers Public Library in Yonkers, New York, which is a cool. very poor community. I had 65 teens come to this thing. I mean, I've never seen anything like that. And we've had a great turnout for many of our events, but that was really unbelievable. 65 teens, two of them brought their babies. 10 adults came just because they wanted to go. But these kids were primarily youth of color in Yonkers, which is quite poor, and they, you know, in talking with them about in particular things like threat modeling, they were the ones I was thinking of actually who were thinking, you know, I have a friend whose parents are quote unquote undocumented. I hate that word, but for lack of a better term. And they were talking about what that might mean for her and, you know, a friend of theirs who'd been arrested and what his privacy might look like now. And, you know, the real material effects on their lives were very apparent to them. And it was just really amazing to see, and unprompted from me, too. You know, they just had this conversation among themselves and were just bouncing ideas off each other. It was cool.
Right.
And it's been a lot of that.
That's amazing. I mean, that's such a what I see as being a really important moment there is that they're having that conversation in a library, and it seems like the missing piece is to have that person who is at the library acting as some sort of connector to a resource then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of these kids are very fortunate that their teen librarians are thoughtful and dedicated people who know that these teens have an interest in this because they're talking to them. And so it's no coincidence that, you know, they're showing up in these numbers. And after I've gone to a lot of these places, I hear back from the teen librarians again about continued efforts that they're working on with these teens. The Yonkers kids, actually, I heard from them immediately after. They wanted me and Nima to return and do another training for them and focus on a little bit more of the advanced stuff. And so, I certainly see some sort of systemic work happening. It's not just these one-off programs, but people who are really interested in building something with their teen communities.
That's great. So, Eva, I wanted to talk to you now, and I was hoping that you could tell me a little bit more about the EFF and what you do there.
Sure. So the Electronic Frontier Foundation is a digital civil liberties organization, and our job is to make sure that when you go online, your rights come with you. And to that end, we pursue this problem from a number of different angles. We have lawyers who work for us who do impact litigation. We have activists who work for us who do sort of letter writing campaigns and write blog posts and start petitions and raise awareness. And we also have technologists, software engineers who work for us, and they help us to build some of the software tools that we've made available open source so that people can use these tools to protect their privacy. I work for EFF's international sort of division, and most of my work is sort of focused on providing privacy and security to especially vulnerable populations. Often this means activists and journalists, but this also means people in abusive relationships, and increasingly it means teens and children, sort of people under the age of 18, who are frequently also part of these other populations that I'm very interested in protecting.
Okay, so at the Digital Rights in Libraries, the ALA Post Conference that I mentioned earlier, this is when I first heard about the work that you were doing. You gave this really fantastic talk on threat modeling, and I was wondering if you could describe what that is and how it's applicable to teens and the adult educators who work with them.
Sure. So the thing about thinking about surveillance is that most of the time when we talk about surveillance, or the sort of big conversation about surveillance, is about protecting the individual from spying by the government. Sometimes it goes so far as to talk about protecting the individual from spying by companies. But teens really have a sort of very different concerns, sometimes about the government and sometimes about companies, but also they are frequently being surveilled by their parents or by their schools or in public places or on social media. They're being surveilled by their peers or their church or other organizations that they're part of. And frequently they don't have a lot in the way of legal recourse when it comes to protecting themselves, because children are seen as this sort of precious population that needs to be protected, and to that end, they need to be extra surveilled, which I think is especially ironic. So that's definitely one of the things that teens really need to think about. Teens also have very limited autonomy. Often they don't have their own internet-connected devices. Sometimes they don't have their own phones or they don't have their own computers. They don't necessarily have internet access at home, so they have to depend on other people's devices. This means that they don't always have complete control over the devices, and there may be, you know, surveillance software installed on them, or they may have some sort of filtering software installed on them, so they can't get to all of the websites or all of the information that they need. And so this is sort of an additional set of concerns that the usual people who are being addressed when we talk about protecting yourself from surveillance don't have. So what threat modeling is, a way of taking all of this question about, like, what should I do to protect myself online, and whittling it down to the stuff that's really important, so that you can figure out what kind of tools you need and how you should behave. And the way that you do this is you start by thinking about all of the things that you need to protect, and then who you need to protect them from. Then what's the worst thing that could happen if this information gets into the hands of the people you need to protect it from? And how far are you willing to go in order to continue to protect that information? And you sort of make all of your decisions based on this sort of understanding, because trying to protect everything from everyone all the time is really just a way to drive yourself crazy. It doesn't work. And most people, when they start thinking about how they want to protect themselves online very rapidly get overwhelmed and therefore decide not to do a whole lot. I think Allison is right to point out that the teens are often the exception to this rule. Teens implicitly understand threat modeling because often they are trying to present different sides of themselves to the world, or they're trying to sort of play with their identity. And so they very much understand that not everybody sees the same side of you and not everybody should be getting the same information about you. And so sectioning off these sort of parts of your personality is something that is very easy to explain to teens.
Wow, so this is a lot. And I think for a lot of people, this is going to, I remember sitting in the audience for your talk and being like, of course, it's not just trying to protect yourself against, the NSA spying on you, but it could be, an abusive boyfriend. It could be one of your parents. And that was the thing that really kind of shook me to my core when I was thinking about, the teens that a lot of libraries and museums work with. So this idea of threat modeling, are there any other tools that someone could begin with if, say, they're trying to teach some of the teens that they're working with about their own digital privacy or their own digital rights?
I would definitely start with EFF's Privacy and Security Guide, which is called Surveillance Self-Defense. And you can get there by going to ssd.eff.org. Surveillance self-defense is available in many languages, including Spanish and Russian and a few others. I think we're at like 5 or 6 languages right now. But Spanish is probably the most useful in the U.S. It's also available in Arabic, which I think is very important. You should be speaking to people in the languages that they are native to. And one of the things that SSD talks about is it has an entire section on threat modeling. It also has an entire section on choosing the tools that are right for you, which I think is really important, because the same tools are not always, this is not a one-size-fits-all situation when it comes to protecting your privacy and security online, especially in a situation where you don't necessarily have control over your devices, which is one of the things that most people assume when they're giving privacy and security advice, and this is totally not the case with teens.
If you were to tell us what some of the most important things that an educator in a library or museum should be able to communicate to a teen in regards to digital privacy, what would that be? What would be the things that you'd really want an educator in a library museum or a museum to walk away with?
Well, the first thing that I think an educator should really know is that there's no one-size-fits-all solution for privacy and security online, not for teens or for anybody else. Having said that, they should also know that privacy is a process, not a tool. And so you may choose a set of tools that turn out to be appropriate to your situation, but you should always keep an eye out for the fact that your threat model is changing, your tools are changing, the things that you want to protect are changing, and the people that you want to protect them from are changing. So this is not just a process, but it's an ever-evolving process. You're never quite done. And that can be a little bit daunting, because you have to keep up to date on what's going on with the tools and what's going on with the people that you want to protect your data from and what's going on with your data. But it's manageable. You can do this. I believe in you. And one of the ways that you can do that is by keeping up to date with the Surveillance Self-Defense blog. We try to make constant updates about the tools that we recommend and the processes that we recommend as the threat landscape changes, so that you don't have to do this. And when we make those updates, it all ends up on our blog, and if you keep track of it, this can definitely influence the sort of the changing face of the advice that you give over time.
Great. Allison?
Yeah, I totally agree with Eva, and I also want to recommend the Surveillance Self-Defense Toolkits, because they're really they're very clear and they're very easy for anyone at any technical level, and I recommend them all the time. The only thing that I would add is that, perhaps, in the vein of keeping things manageable, I find that people, it contributes to their success very much if you teach them maybe one thing at a time. And so as far as educators and librarians who work with teens are concerned, maybe finding a way to introduce one tool you know, for example, Signal for secure texting and secure calls, and do some promotional activity around that and get the teams used to it and get them talking to each other about why they want to use it, and then, you know, make sure everybody's comfortable until, before you move on to the next thing. Another thing is that we're all more successful and certainly safer online if we do this together, and so encouraging teams to work with their friends, maybe throw a crypto party together, which is a party where you teach each other different privacy tools. You can use the EFF's resources to do this. You know, I think the fundamental thing that I like to express to people is that you're not crazy to care about your privacy, that everyone has a threat model and everyone has a right to privacy, and that if there's one sort of pithy way to think about it that I think is meaningful, that privacy is about having control. And if you want to have control over your digital life, then there are privacy practices that can help you do that.
Oh, one of the things that we have on the SSD website mm-hmm. is a playlist for LGBTQ youth, which is sort of our, you know, top 7 or 8 bits of the website that we think mm-hmm. you should be looking at first mm-hmm. if you have that particular set of concerns. And there's a little blog post that talks about sort of what we think the threat model is for LGBTQ youth.
And I know it identifies specifically LGBT youth, but I have found that to be very useful with many other, with various youth, queer or not. So.
Great. Thank you both so much. This has been really wonderful. And I will post links to the to that EFF page and to the Library Freedom Project.
Oh, it's our pleasure.
Thank you, KFI.